David Hankins.
And I'm Paul Hankins.
And welcome to On the Air with Power Squared, behind-the-scenes look at what we hope will be everyone's favorite comic book, Power Squared.
Yeah.
Sorry. Tonight we have a special guest, David Whalen, who is the founder of Correct Handed Comics, and for which you do things like The Offspring. So welcome aboard.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on, David and Paul.
Okay. So as we talked before the show, we haven't actually ever met. We were both included in the same article from AMA Feed, did a story about 11 non-DC Marvel comics you should read. I think both, because we both had done AMA Feeds, but it appeared in Board Panda, or on the website Board Panda.
Nice.
Yeah. So how did your AMA Feed go?
It went well. I had some great questions, great conversations. It was a lot busier than I really expected, to be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. Did that turn anybody that you, do you think you got readers out of that, or just?
I think I did. I think it's, you know, anytime I do something a little bit different like that, my goal is one more eyeball on it.
Right.
You know, if it gets me one more set of eyeballs, then it was worth it.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. You live in a small town in upstate New York?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm a very small town in upstate New York. I'm a teacher. I've been teaching for about 15 years, elementary art teacher. And I have been drawing indie comics, I'd say, for the last 5 years or so. I started with some very, very, very small press books. And about 2 years into that, it was going okay, and then I just kind of realized that, you know, that I could just do it on my own. And about 5 years ago, published my first of my ongoing series, The Offspring. And it's been a slow go, but I've gotten to the point where I'm about to publish issue 15, and it's going well. And in between there, I've been able to get some graphic novels, a few 24-page one-shots, a four-issue miniseries. I've been really been lucky to be able to get some of the stories that I've had in my brain for the last few years out there, and they've been well received.
So, you got into comic books. Did you read a lot of comics growing up, and did you have a favorite one? Or,
oh yeah, I would. I got started on Archie Comics way back in the day, and then graduated into superhero stuff. And I would read anything that was superhero. I would say that the thing that's got me interested in really understanding character and character design and backstory was those Who's Who from DC and the Marvel Handbook stuff that they put out in the, had to be the mid to early 80s.
Yeah.
And they grew the issues from there. But I saw that and it blew my mind. I'd never seen the characters broken down like that and really given their backstory. And it was something that I read through those things a bazillion times. And from there, story and design really for me took off. I paid a lot more attention to reading the story and then reading it again and reading it again to really understand plot and character development and the motivations of each of those characters, whether they're superheroes or not.
So what made you decide to do your own? You said you had ideas in your head, story ideas.
Yeah. The Offspring I've had since I was probably 18 years old. And of course, the story has changed and grown as I've changed and grown. And it just really came out of a love of comic books. But knowing that I liked superheroes, but I knew I didn't want to do a normal kind of superhero story. If people have ever read The Offspring, when people read The Offspring, they'll realize that the characters have powers, but they're not superheroes. I went in going, I knew I didn't want to have, I like to make the joke that I came up with the concept of no fights, no tights about 15 years before Smallville came out, but I have no proof that I did that. And I wanted to see characters that were a little bit more like people that I knew, people that had real life problems that were not going to be solved in one story arc, that we're not going to be solved in 24 issues or even through the entire run of a series. The problems were always going to be with them. And that was one of the reasons why I came up with these three main characters that had those problems that you try to run from, but you can't. And having those characters that have those real dark issues, and then have powers grow out of those real dark issues. As I started to grow with the characters and grow with the story started to grow inside my brain, I realized that I had a lot of stories to be able to tell with these characters, to be able to show, while showing superhero-ese type stuff, it was really more about their journey as individuals and as a group to be able to come together to overcome not only demons and monsters and fun stuff like that, but also the their ability to be able to overcome a past that they can't do anything about.
So you've talked about, you wanted to give us sort of the premise of The Offspring, yeah. Then?
Yeah, so it's three main characters, Will, Sarah, and Vince, and each of them were abused physically, mentally, emotionally as children. They were each taken from their family members after tragedies. And the tragedies are laid out in the story, obviously. The first one opens up, the first issue opens up, understanding the issues that Sarah has had and how she gets herself out of those issues, and it does not go well for anybody involved. And then we realize that she's been in prison for 2 years. Not so much because of the incident, but indirectly because of the incident. And we realize that these characters, after they've met up at what I call an alternative school, most people our age were called an orphanage, but they don't really have orphanages anymore. So it's an alternative school where the caretaker takes in these students who really don't have any place else to go. And most of the students that come to her are just normal children. These three students, they come to realize that they all grew up with these issues, these abuses, but also realize that they grew powers based on how they were abused. So they shared that connection with each other. Then as they grew and changed into their 20s and reached a little bit of more maturity, they started to realize that wasn't the only connection they had. They were connected mentally also. And they would constantly separate and find each other and separate and find each other, sometimes on purpose, usually by accident. When we meet the three kids at the beginning, they don't really like each other very much. they know that they're connected on some level, but they're not really friends. And it's how they grow and change in their feelings for each other and their relationship with each other that helps them be able to overcome not only the monsters on the inside, but the monsters on the outside.
Wow. So you say that they've been abused as children. Is that based on anything in your past or I know you're a teacher. Does this come up from other students? I mean, where did this come from?
Unfortunately, you hear stories and you see things. Nothing that I personally had to go through, but there was always rumblings of stories. And as a teacher, unfortunately, you hear these things come up from time to time that you have to, on some level, in my position, know about but can't do anything about. Know about it and be able to indirectly help students who might be going through some big time problems at home, and their only safe place is school sometimes. So that was definitely something that when I started teaching 15 years ago, really started seeing and really started connecting with the stories that I wanted to tell. It was one of the reasons why I kind of pushed my want to be able to continue to tell these stories, because it's a story that happens. These stories happen all too often, and it's through the lens of, oh my gosh, these kids have superpowers also, to be able to tell these stories that maybe might be able to help somebody get through an issue that they're going through.
Huh. That's very nice. So you have 14 issues out?
14, yes.
And how long have you been doing this?
So, like I said, I started with Correct Hand of Comics about 5 years ago, and I was able to put out the first four issues in the first year or so, because I've been working on it for a while. So it was really about me just getting beyond my own brain to say, this is the story that I want to tell. This is how I want to tell this story and be able to put it out. and just be able to get past my own insecurities to be able to do it. And it, like I said, it worked well. I'm really proud of the first story arc that lasted those four issues. And the way that it's grown for me is a story arc through story arc. Once I got to issue 13, I called that season one. Okay. So I took about 3 or 4 months off to be able to get in some other comic books, get in some other ideas that I wanted to get out there in the world, put out some one shots, started to connect with a couple other writers to be able to get some ideas for other stories that I wanted to tell. And then when January hit this year, started on what I'm calling season two. So 14 came out in January, 15 comes out next month, while still working on some of those one shots in between. So it's been a fun ride, but I hope to say that I am learning every day, learning to make it better, make myself better, make it clear, make it as solid a product as I possibly can. And I really think that with 14 issues in the can and 15 coming, that the story's coming out really the way I want to come out. I couldn't be more proud of it.
Good. So you write and you draw The Offspring.
Yes.
Do you have any other collaborators on The Offspring, or is it just only you?
I've been lucky enough to be able to have a couple colorists jump in here and there on certain issues. But for the most part, it was me doing everything, lettering, coloring, writing, publishing, everything. Once I hit issue 14, I met a guy through Facebook, like so many of us do, named Chris McCauley, who has worked for Boom and Disney and DC. And he got a hold of a couple of my books and asked me for a couple digital, copies of. And I was happy to oblige because I kind of knew who he was. And he called me up one day and said, I want to be a part of this. And I said, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I'm really looking for a colorist. Is that something that you're interested in doing? And he said, I'd love to color some books for you. So when issue 13 came out, I was already halfway done coloring it myself. So he did the cover for that. When 14 came out, which is a time travel story into the Civil War, I threw him some pages, and the first couple pages I saw blew me away. I'm like, yes, let's continue this. There's no way I was going to say no to any of this. So for issues 14 and 15, and hopefully for the foreseeable future, the colorist Chris McCauley will be continuing adding so much depth to the inks and the story that I have. When I saw those first couple pages, I knew it was exactly the direction that I wanted to go with this story, with the Civil War story that does not hold back. It's fairly dark. It's fairly historically accurate with contemporary twists in it. It was definitely his coloring style definitely matched what I wanted to do.
That's great. So you found somebody that's a really nice story.
Yes.
So what is your process then?
A long and drawn out one. It depends on who you ask, I guess. But but for the most part, for The Offspring, I have a basic outline of what I want to do. My plan is to get to 50 issues to be able to tell the story from start to end. And it's a pretty concise story. There was actually parts of the stories lines that I had that I kind of took out, because I knew I wanted to be able to get to certain beats faster. So it was really kind of a tough thing to be able to say, gosh, I've got this two-issue story arc or this three-issue story arc. And I'm like, but it may tell you a little bit more about the characters, but it doesn't get us where we need to go in the story fast enough. So I actually had to take a couple stories out to be able to get to 50 and be able to tell the story I wanted to tell. That being said, if it continues to grow in popularity and people want more, I'm more than happy to go past 50 issues.
Yeah.
But my process is pretty much, I have an idea for the story, the layout. I usually start with the beginning and the end. I know how I want to start and I know how I want to stop. Whether it's a issue of The Offspring where I want a cliffhanger at the end, or it's a 24-page one-shot where I want that hook at the end to be able to really grab a reader to go to, and maybe surprise them with that little twist at the end that people weren't expecting. And from there, I am visual first, so I'll work on some rough thumbnails of pages or even just single panels that I know I want to get into the story. And usually Usually from there, it takes me maybe an hour, hour and a half to be able to get 24 pages thumbnailed. And then starting on the big ones, I'd say I can get a page a day done, given no outside influencers or outside problems. Yeah. Here's the funny story of sometimes how my process works. I was in the classroom with third graders, and I'd done the thing that I needed them to do with them, and they were coloring the thing, the drawing. And I was walking around, and in my brain, it just kind of popped. What would happen? What would I do if aliens attacked us right now? and I was walking around the room, thinking about that, and helping the kids. Hey, yeah, put some more red here, put some more blue here, whatever it was. And I kept thinking about it. I'm like, I think I've got a story here. So as the kids were drawing, I picked up my notebook and started writing down little, basic ideas about what I wanted to do. And I'd say by the end of the day, I had the thing written and thumbnailed out, and it became my 24 page one shot, "Will Aliens Do My Homework?"
Right.
And I got a great compliment the other day from a reader. He said, "I don't think I've ever read a story where the hero of the story was an art teacher." I can't think of one either. I think I started a trend.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about some of your other stories. The Loved Ones, you have Evolution Utero and Shady Lady. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I won't stop. Do you want to talk a little bit about these other books you've written?
Yeah, The Loved Ones actually was the concept I had. I'm a big fan of classic movie monsters. Bride of Frankenstein, Wolfman, Mummy Returns, that kind of stuff, the old black and white stuff, Bela Lugosi mm-hmm. type stuff. And I had this concept to where, what if these classic movie monsters had children who they abandoned, and the children decide to hunt their parents? So I brought them together with this like Van Helsing type character, and I knew I had a good concept, but I wanted to reach out to an artist friend of mine, Brian Menard. He actually is the owner operator of Dojo Kun Comics. He's got some great books out. So if you get a chance to Google them. He does some great superhero books. And I told him the concept, and he liked it. He said, "Yeah, give me a little bit." And by the end of the day, he had a rough outline already of what the idea of what he wanted to do. And the story that came out of that with these four characters who are the kids of those classic movie monsters, it became really a nurture versus nature type story, to where these characters, these children, monster children, are being brought up by a monster hunter.
Right.
So it's that dichotomy of, we are being told to do the right thing, but we're also being told that we are the bad guy. So what does the bad guy do, and how does the bad guy do the right thing? How does the bad guy go hunt the other bad guys, knowing the bad guys are their parents? What do they do? So it's really nurture versus nature situation. And the story, I'm very proud of it. We did it in black and white because it was black and white classic movie monsters. And it turned out really good. The four main characters ended up having such broad, different personalities that they really worked well together. Some of my other books, like Evolution Utero, is the first four-issue miniseries that I came up with. And it is, again, my kind of flip take on superheroes. Is I wanted to do a superhero story, but I didn't want flights and tights. And I thought, well, what's a kind of superhero that I've never seen before? And the idea was, comes from the idea of some people, the phrase that people say is, sometimes you're born to be a hero. Well, I thought, why don't I take that back a little bit and say, what if they're a hero before they're even born? So I decided to have a woman who is, picture the worst person you've ever met in your life. Selfish, mean, doesn't care about anybody, no goals, no ambition in life, just kind of trudging through life, drugs and alcohol, all that kind of stuff. She ends up getting pregnant, and that baby, the fetus, before it even is fully developed inside her, starts to develop superpowers. So this woman, who is the worst person in the world, starts to have a baby inside of her developing superpowers that is clearly already starting to manifest that hero idea, that hero concept. So she starts to change and grow because of the superhero baby that's changing and growing inside of her. And it really, for me, it's about how parenting changes somebody. Before you become a parent, you don't quite realize how selfish you are in some cases, not everybody, of course. But once you become a parent, you start to realize that your life is no longer yours. And you either kind of push back on that, or you just let it go and say, yes, my life is my children and my family, and I'll do anything for them. So it's that, that pushback of the most selfish person in the world trying to decide whether she wants to continue her selfish ways or to be driven by this baby to be able to do better and be better. And it's the four issues turn out really well. I was really excited about it when I was able to get it finished. And it's kind of like my Back to the Future ending. The story ends, but it definitely has a stepping stone to the next. So my plan is to be able to do the next stepping stone of the four issues. So by the end of the book, she doesn't even have the baby. We're not even there yet. So while the story does end, there's clearly an opening for the rest of the story. And that's something I plan on getting to in the next years.
Yeah.
but I'm really proud of it. Now, my one shots came out of knowing that I wanted to be able to tell other stories, but didn't always have time to be able to do a four issue miniseries or 100+ pages or another ongoing series. So I decided to take some of the concepts that I have and kind of compress them down into 24 pages. So for something like Shady Lady, I'm a big fan of the film noir, black and white, like Frank Sinatra type stuff, like Suddenly or Lady in the Lake or Alfred Hitchcock Rear Window type stuff. And Shady Lady was a contemporary film noir where the heroine in this case, was clearly going through issues of her own. But we see her walking through life in New York City and not ignoring other people's issues. So while she's dealing with the issues of her own, it's kind of like little vignettes of her helping other people. And through the process, it kind of helps her. And it's a lot of... things that we're seeing in our society today, a lot of the, unfortunately, the visceral behavior, the hatred, the name calling, the not having empathy for other people. And those are some of the things that she deals with as we go with her through her life in New York City. And at the end of the story, you come to realize why she is doing these things, why she's putting herself in these situations, because she has gone through something and didn't want other people to have to go through similar situations. So that's kind of like my film noir take on something that that is, I think, recognizable, but also a little bit different, a little bit new, I think.
Okay.
And then I won't stop. Is really it's the closest thing I've ever come to a traditional superhero story. The superhero's name is Spiral, and when you see him, he's the cape and he's the symbol on the chest, and he's the big brawled up guy. But I wanted to tell a story maybe a little bit more psychological about a superhero. So while Spiral, the hero, does have alter ego, does have family, all these things, he goes through a traumatic experience so big that he's decided that with great power comes great responsibility. He is completely letting go of the alter ego, the friends, the family, and he's decided he's going to spend his entire life, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, saving as many people as he possibly can. He doesn't eat, he doesn't sleep, and I really wanted to deal with the psychological and physical ramifications of a decision like that. What if Superman or Spider-Man had decided to throw away all their material stuff and just save people. And I think the story ends in a really interesting way to be able to show why the heroes can't be on call 24 hours a day.
Wow. And if that wasn't enough, you've also written a novel? The Last Ride of Tyburn?
The Last Ride of Tyburn. My wife made the joke when I started writing it. This was probably about 10 years ago that I started writing it, that I'm the only person that will try to write their first novel in a dead genre, which is a Western. It's a Western. And I think, again, that I've had a really recognizable take on Westerns, but threw some different things in there. Some things that really, quite honestly, I took from my childhood with my brothers and sisters, and threw them some things in there that would make them laugh and that made me laugh, but also the exciting, you know, the all the cowboy ride, horseback riding and shootouts and all the things that you would see from a John Wayne or a Jimmy Stewart type Western, one of those spaghetti Westerns or Louis LaMarr Westerns that you'd read. But with a little bit of a contemporary spin and an ending that I think works really, again, an ending that works really well. Obviously, I really care about the ending to be able to like twist that ending, to be able to give people a little bit of a surprise at the end. But I really like those characters. I really like the way that that book came out. I'm actually in the process of my second book, and it's more of a ghost story.
Well, you're all over the place, aren't you?
My brain doesn't stop, unfortunately, to the point where sometimes I'll wake up from a cold sleep and I'll be like, "That's a great idea. Let me write that down real quick."
And then fall back to it again.
So I love all genres. And my plan is to get at least one story from every genre that's ever been created in the history of genres.
Okay.
I don't know if I can do it or not, but I'm going to try.
Okay.
Well, I admire the ambition.
Yeah. So with the loved ones, somebody else actually wrote the script?
Yes. Brian Menard, he is the owner and writer at Dojo Kun Comics. Okay. And I believe you can find him on Facebook at Dojo Kun Comics.
Now, was that something that, I mean, you guys worked out the story, or did he give you the script and you illustrated it? How did that work?
Yeah, it was from my concept. So I had a concept and I was working on some other things. So Brian and I had worked together on some other things with some smaller press stuff, and that's how we had met. And I thought, you know, this would be a great opportunity to be able to collaborate with another creator. So when I messaged him and said, I have this concept and I think it's a really cool idea. We talked about it for, you know, a couple of days, kind of throwing ideas at each other back and forth. And he, you know, threw some stuff at me and I threw some stuff back at him. And he really got it. He really got the concept that I was trying to, the idea that I was trying to go for. And like I said, he put a script together in really just a couple of days. And once I read it, I knew that he had really latched onto it and really had something that I think, again, was very different.
Okay. Was it weird? I mean, was it different to be then drawing somebody else's script, or was that?
I had done that before. Like I said, when I started with some small press stuff, I had started off doing like some anthology stuff. So it'd be 3 pages, it'd be 10 pages. I started doing some 24 page one shots for some people. So I had done some other people's scripts before. And I really do enjoy doing other people's scripts. It gives me an opportunity to kind of get out of my own comfort zone and flex my muscles a little bit more. It's something I try to do in my writing. I try to come up with ideas or concepts that I know that I haven't done before, to be able to do something new, to be able to show something new, to be able to see if I can solve the artistic visual problem. So I really do like working with other artists, other writers. In fact, my next two one-shots, I didn't write. I had ideas for one of the concepts and kind of, again, gave it to another writer who I said, "Hey, what do you think about this?" And he said, "Yeah, give me a little bit, give me a couple of days," and came back and he pretty much had a full script ready to go. We made some adjustments here or there. So the next one shot I have coming out, I'm hoping in the next 2 months, is called The Sock Hop Killer. And it's a kind of like a homage to like Freddy Krueger and Jason, like Nightmare on Elm Street type stuff. And I think that the character is a very visual, very noticeable slasher type villain. And I think the story that we have for her, the slasher type villain, is really different, a little bit different than what I've seen from those 80s and 90s, like Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street type characters.
So have you done any conventions or signings or things like that?
I was, when I first started, my hope was to get out of a lot of content. I wanted to get out content. that I knew that I would have ready for conventions. I would always go to conventions and talk up with people. And when I did tiny, small conventions, I'd have a booth, and I would it'd be the very, very small ones that we have here. Like I said, in upstate New York, there's not really much going on. So there was a couple over up in Canada, south of Canada, still in New York, that I would start with, just kind of wet my whistle a little bit. And then once I was ready to be able to go into bigger conventions, to be able to get a bigger table set up, the COVID hit.
Yeah, right.
I was getting it all ready, and then next thing I know, there's no more convention. But I will say that with COVID, it's given me a chance to be able to do things like this, to be able to meet people that I never would have met before, that I never would have, gotten some great friends that live halfway across the world. And it really is one of the positives, unfortunately one of the few positives, but a positive for someone like me to be able to reach out to people all throughout the interwebs, to be able to meet people and talk to people that I knew I wouldn't have met before. So I won't say that it replaces conventions. It will never replace conventions, but it's definitely something that has been a positive for me in my experience, to be able to learn and grow and to be able to meet people through this kind of interaction. I love it.
So you're a teacher. Are you teaching in a classroom now? Are you doing it virtually or?
This year we started, so we have our kids going at both mine and the district that my wife works at. Our kids are going half time. So one group comes one day, the second group comes another day, and they just rotate. So usually I would see almost 400 kids in a 3-day cycle in our school, but now I'm seeing those 400 kids in a 6-day cycle. So it kind of stretches out the year. Normally in a full year, I'd see those 400 kids 80 times in a year. It doesn't sound like much, but that's about what it is for an art teacher. So now I'm only seeing them like 40 times in the span of an entire year. So it's definitely taken in the classroom work, taking it down only halfway. But we do have the opportunity to be able to use the Google Classroom to where we can put up different kinds of, or I put up different kinds of art projects and different things for the kids to be able to do stuff when they are at home. And the kids do a pretty good job at it. You'll always get a student here or a parent there. I don't have time for that. I'm not going to learn how to do that. And that's normal. But for the most part, a good percentage of the students that I have are really, really want to do it. They want to work. They want to get that work in. They want to learn. They want to do it. They want to draw. They want to do math. They want to do all those things. So the district that I work in does very much support the arts. So I'm very happy with the district that I work in compared to some other places that I've been, where they're just like, oh, you're just a babysitter for the teacher until they get their kids back in their classroom. Right. That's not the case here. And unfortunately, it's amazing in the 21st century that that's still the mindset of some people, isn't it?
Yeah.
That the arts are somehow frivolous. But, if without the arts, when they turn on their television, it would be a blank screen. When they get in their car and they turn on the radio, they wouldn't hear anything.
Yeah, no one realizes that part of it.
All the logos and things we have on our t-shirts, the shoes that we're wearing, the houses that we're living in, the cars that we're driving, all this is because of people who draw things.
Was there any anxiety about going back into the classroom?
No, not for me. The only anxiety that I had was making sure that I was still able to give the students, when I could see them, the art curriculum that they deserved, to be able to teach them. I tell them all the time, art isn't about drawing pretty pictures. You can do that with art. Art is about seeing and understanding your world better. So being able to, it was really trying to hone in those concepts and ideas that I really wanted to make sure that they could grasp this year and catch them up if need be next year, when hopefully this all goes back to normal. So I won't say that it hasn't had some bumps in the road. There have been a lot of bumps in the road, but so far we haven't careened off a bridge or anything, so it's okay.
Are there precautions in the classroom that weren't there before? I mean,
6 feet. It's actually gone down to, it used to be 6 feet shoulder to shoulder, which was difficult. I have a big classroom, but with in some cases, 14, 15 kids coming into the classroom, and that's half the class. It was difficult to be able to get them 6 feet apart. So I had to, kind of use my imagination with my table placement and everything. But since over the last 2 months, it's gone down from 6 feet shoulder to shoulder, from 6 feet from nose to nose. So it's a little bit more space to be able to work with the students. And it's hopefully going to go down to 3 feet, and then still wearing masks with 3 feet. So we're hoping in the next couple months that it kind of starts to get a little bit more normal. Our kindergarten came back, all of them, full time about a month ago. And it's going okay. It's going well. The kids keep their masks on. We draw and paint and have a good time. It was like 6 months into the school year, it was kind of like starting the school year over with them. Because even though they were in the classroom, they hadn't been in the classroom altogether. So it was like a brand new experience for them. And it was tricky the first couple of days. But once they got it, they got it, and they remembered the rules, and everything was fine. So we're hoping that that's that idea of bringing all the kids back slowly before the end of the year, so that next year we can get back to some kind of normalcy, is the plan. We'll see what happens. Luckily, I'm not in charge. It's a lowly art teacher.
You've got a lot of different books out, or different genres. So I'm just going to ask this about The Offspring. Do you have an ideal reader in mind?
Not really. I think there is enough in there, and you don't want to say it's for everybody, because no, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody, right? It's for people who want to read exciting stories that have a couple little thrill, couple thrills, couple chills, some shocks in there, but want to read really interesting characters that have really deep backstories. That feel like real people, that feel like you could call them up and talk to them on the phone, but also fight demons.
Okay. is that a similar audience for your other books, or is it each book has a different audience in mind?
I'd say that the each book, being a different genre, you're gonna attract different crowds. So the Shady Lady, which is kind of a film noir type thing, is going to attract a different crowd than it will Aliens Do My Homework. And I think that for me, one of the thing that, and for any, I think, comic book creator, the cover is the thing that kind of helps veer, get the eyes on it that you want to get on it. So Shady Lady is clearly a little bit of a darker tale with the cover, and she's holding a cigar and she's hiding in the shadow, and there's some darkness there. While Will Aliens Do My Homework is a whole fourth grade class and their teacher being sucked up into an alien ship, that's 100 feet above them through like a tractor beam. So you can kind of gauge the audience that might be a little bit more, some of the stories might be a little more kid friendly. Some might be more geared towards action adventure. Some might be more geared towards thrillers. Some might be more geared towards comedy. But I, there was one of my fears that being so eclectic with my genre choice, that I would have trouble trying to find an audience and try to find an audience that knew that I was going to change and grow, and hopefully change and grow with the audience also. So the audience will change and grow with me. So if it's a student or a 12, 13 year old that will read something like Will Aliens Do My Homework, they might pick up something like The Offspring to be able to maybe see that if that student's going through troubles, that they're not the only ones going through trouble. So that's kind of my plan, being able to catch certain readers with different genres and hopefully be able to have them find something else in my collection of content that they can latch onto also.
So besides your website, how else do you connect with your readers?
Yeah. So correctanacomics.com, and I'm making changes all the time to it. There's always new stuff up there, new content, new preview pages for books that are coming out. You can find me on Facebook at correctanacomics. You can find me at Twitter at correct_handed and Instagram at correct_handed. You can find me on TikTok, and you can find me on Instagram at David Whalen.
So I assume that you're left-handed then?
I am correct. I'm correct-handed. Yes. Right-handed and there's correct-handed. Yes.
So you plan to do 50 issues of The Offspring. Are there any? Do you? Are there other projects that you want to see with that? Do you ever see it like being a series or a movie or anything like that?
I think that at this point, anybody who's ever written or drawn a comic book or has a comic book out will go, I'd love to see this as a TV show or a movie or something like that. And I think that that would be amazing. But I'm not putting my eggs in any of that basket just because at this point, it's not about it's not about doing it in different media. It's about really honing the media that I'm working on right now. So if somebody were to see something like The Offspring or Williams do my homework and say, hey, that'd be an awesome movie, I'd say, yeah, it probably would be an awesome movie. What are we going to do about it? But right now, it's not something that I am actively searching for. Clearly, that'd be amazing. But I think that my focus is better spent on really honing my skills as a writer and an artist and a comic book creator.
I noticed on your website you don't have merch. Do you have any ideas to do that?
I do have ideas for merch. I do have ideas for merch, and I am in the process of working on those right now. And I hope in the next year before Christmas of 2021, to be able to have some merch on sale in my on my website.
Okay. So this is we're going to sort of wrap it up. So people can find you again where?
CorrectHandedComics.com. There are links to every single book we have there. You can find me on Facebook at CorrectHandedComics, on Twitter and on Twitter at Correct_Handed, and Instagram at David Whalen, and TikTok at David Whalen also.
Okay.
If you are watching this on YouTube and you liked this, leave a like, subscribe if you want to see more, and ring the notification bell if you want to see exactly when these videos go up.
All right. So thanks very much for being on the show. And maybe we'll have you back when you have merch out or something like that.
Oh, that'd be amazing. I really appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you so much.
It's been very entertaining for us as well. Appreciate you being on the show. So until next time, I'm David Hankins.
And I'm Paul Hankins.
And this has been On the Air with Power Squared.